Welcome to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We hope the following program will challenge you and encourage you in your faith journey.
Give yourself a lot of credit as a parent. You're teaching them to use a spoon, how to breathe, how to eat.
That was the easy
You're
part.
A good teacher. And doesn't mean that you have to homeschool them. There are many ways to do it other than that. And we're finding some incredible ways to help educate our children without necessarily putting them in a classroom the same way every day. But the credit, a lot of it credit goes to parents. Have confidence in yourself first. You can do this. You can help your child learn because it's a partnership.
Well, that's Cynthia Tobias describing the essential role that parents play in your child's education. And Cynthia will share more of her insights and expertise today on Focus on the Family. Thanks for joining us. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, I've always believed that a child's first teachers are mom and dad. That makes perfect sense because we're there and we're most responsible for who they are and who they're going to become. And for us as Christian parents, we want to guide them, obviously, toward a relationship with Jesus Christ and to, you know, develop their character, their heart in such a way that they could see the world through that. Mm-hmm. I'm not ashamed of that. Sometimes people outside of the Christian faith, they kind of belittle us for doing that. But that's our prerogative as parents with our children. Mm-hmm. There has been this brewing contention that's occurring now with public education. And we have a wonderful guest to talk today with us about what's happening, how we as parents should be looking at this situation. And, you know, for me, this is really important. If I were back at square one with Trent and Troy, I would seriously be looking at alternatives to public schools. Our boys did go through charter school. It was a good experience, but the charter school was really, you know, encouraging of parental involvement. Mm-hmm. A lot of public schools are not. And we really have the goal today to equip you to make the best decision that you can make. And let me say for those listeners and viewers who are Christians working in public schools as teachers or school administrators, we get that. It's a mission field and we are, you know, blessed to know that you're there and encouraging those kids. And we will pray for you, as we often do here at Focus on the Family.
Yeah, the atmosphere is not exactly conducive to shaping character from a Christian perspective for those teachers. So we are grateful. And the key you mentioned there, Jim, is it's our responsibility as moms and dads. And
yeah.
Today our guest is an educational consultant and guru, Cynthia Tobias. She is back here at Focus, and she's a popular author and speaker. She's got a passion for education and learning and helping families be successful. Her most recent book is published by Focus on the Family, and the title is Reclaiming Education, Teach Your Child to Be a Confident Learner. And you can learn more about that and our guest at the website, focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
Cynthia, welcome back to Focus. Always good to have you here.
Oh, thanks. I really enjoy it.
You're such an interesting mix of background as a police officer and school teacher.
There's more in common.
I was going to say, did you find much distinction between the two?
It has its moments.
Yeah. And in that context, what we were saying a moment ago is so true, right? There are wonderful Absolutely. Christian people working in public education. And boy, do we need them there. And we need even more people there.
And all my 8 years of teaching was in public education.
Yeah.
But it was an uphill battle in many times.
And I think the key point there is there seems to be so much transitioning from the lockdown with the pandemic and I think parents really getting a deeper view into public education, what's going on. Speak to the revelation that seems to have occurred coming out of the pandemic. What happened and why are parents all of a sudden alarmed?
Well, 2020 was a huge wake-up call because the classroom became the living room. Mm. And suddenly parents realized what the kids were and weren't learning. And it was obvious. There, you know, we believed that the public schools, all the schools were obviously student-focused, and they cared about what kids learned and how they learned it. But we found out, actually, they don't. It really isn't about that. It's not even neutral about that. And I would even go so far as to say we uncovered the fact that really, in many ways, war has been declared on the American family, that it's really more indoctrination of a lot of things that aren't even, for instance, 77%, it turns out, of kids who graduate from public school, having been K through 12, 77% of them are not proficient in all the basic subjects.
See, that right there is such a failing grade for public education. Mm-hmm. And we've heard that over and over again. Here in Colorado, we track that closely. We have good alliances with people who are trying to change that, starting with the school boards, right, to get the right people into school boards. I don't think a lot of people realize how much spiritual battles going on in that regard and what some people want to teach kids. Going back to the kind of the basics, you know, school was always about writing, reading, and arithmetic. I mean, that was kind of the, let's get people ready to go into the workplace to develop them in these basic skills. Now it's all about, seemingly, all about more of an indoctrination, like you talk about, social issues, the LGBTQ issues, you know, right, talking about how kids need to think. And it's like somebody decided that if we have control of the children for 8 hours a day, we want to do more with them than just teach them the basics, or right, don't teach them the basics,
yeah, right,
and start teaching them just social indoctrination.
Right. And it used to be, you know, you'd fail if you didn't get good grades and get a good GPA. Well, that's no longer an issue, because that's not, with social justice and equity,
yeah,
we can't really judge you by your grade point average. We can't, because we don't want to say that you're smart and have somebody else be not as smart. And I have a very close college friend who just recently retired from public school teaching kindergarten.
Huh.
And when I asked her, I said, what do they do in kindergarten these days? At first, she said, well, they have to write a position paper before they can graduate from kindergarten. And I said, what are kindergartners, how can they even write? And what
a position,
kind of position paper
on paper? What chocolate they prefer.
Yeah, well, it turns out it's more like a position paper on, you know, who I am and what gender. And, you know, I was at a homeschool co-op not long ago, and one lady came up to me and she said, you know what did it for me? She said, just this fall, I went to register my kindergartner in the public school, and she said, I was filling out the form, and the question was, what gender would you like your kindergartner to be called? And she said, I put the pen down, and I walked out, and I said, I'm going to do anything I have to do to not have my child in a system like that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a certain intensity that I'm expressing because it comes from the deepest part of my soul. Mm-hmm. Because I would be worried if I had, and I am worried for other people's kids that are now starting into the system. And again, I've said this, each district is different, each school is a little different, but generally, this is the direction that public education is taking. Yet at the same time, I mean, there were great school teachers back when I was in school, yeah, that many years ago, decades.
Yes.
But
me too.
The beauty of that, that there were committed Christians in that, in my experience, and they played a significant role in me learning about faith and those kinds of things.
And thank the Lord for those,
yeah,
teachers. But, and they're listening now, but they're going to be nodding their head, mm-hmm, when I tell you that, because as a public high school teacher myself, they have an uphill battle, and they have constraints on them that they can't break through. And so even the best teacher, and you'll have some teachers, those wonderful Christian teachers that are a gem in your child's life,
yeah,
that, but they're going to be the minority, so much so that the teacher themselves, they can't afford to lose their position, mm-hmm, a lot of times by compromising too much.
So they then become quieter, more silent, etc. And I get that. Very difficult decisions. Let's move into really helping parents better understand options that they have, et cetera, learning styles. That's what we want to concentrate,
right,
on. The book,
right,
that you've written concentrates on that. So help us understand the problem of a one-size-fits-all approach to education generally.
Well, in general, it was created by Horace Mann way back when.
Yeah.
And it was during an age where we put children of a certain age in a certain grade. We taught subjects an hour at a time, everybody the same. And a certain day and certain hours and sit in desks and all of that. Well, Horace Mann died, I don't know, something like 100 years before Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone. That's how old it is.
Yeah.
So, and for instance, Dell came out with in 2017 with a futures report, the Dell Computer Company, and said, the kids in school right now, the K-12, by 2030, 85% of them are going to be in jobs that don't even exist yet. Please, you've got to help the children and the students themselves figure out how to learn, not just sit in those seats and get a grade in a subject.
Yeah.
And so being a confident learner, in my mind, means taking what God gave you naturally, and there are no two alike. So if you treat those kids exactly alike, they're not going to thrive. They're not going to understand how they learn. So if we insist on keeping our kids in a rigid system that we let somebody else determine, we're not going to really, you know, God has a purpose. He created us for a purpose that no one else can fulfill.
Yeah.
And every child, Dr. Thomas Armstrong had a great quote. He said, every child is an unrepeatable miracle.
Yeah.
So the more we take away that individuality and make them an automaton or just a piece of the puzzle, the greater offense we are to God.
Or back to our opening comments about making them a societal change force for a direction they want to go. And I don't want to, through the threat of all of our discussion, that's the underlying thing, what's really happening in schools. But you have identified some various learning styles, and we're going to get to those in a minute. But speak to how moms and dads can better understand and nurture their child's innate learning strengths.
First of all, give yourself a lot of credit as a parent. You're teaching them to use a spoon, how to breathe, how to eat.
That was the easy
You're
part.
You're a good teacher. And doesn't mean that you have to homeschool them. There are many ways to do it other than that. Or along with that, there are some great Christian schools that are actually coming alongside homeschoolers these days. And we're finding some incredible ways to help educate our children without necessarily putting them in a classroom the same way every day. But the credit, a lot of it credit goes to parents. Have confidence in yourself first. You can do this. You can help your child learn because it's a partnership. What you don't know, you can learn with them.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
For more than 30 years, we've encouraged Mary's faith and family.
Like, really, Focus on the Family has been, and all the different resources and individuals, the voices of Focus on the Family, has really been a mentor to me, to my family, and just, it's cool to see the legacy.
I'm Jim Daly. Help us save more families every month by calling 800-A-FAMILY or donate at focusonthefamily.com/joy. Hey, Jim Daly here. If you like the Focus on the Family broadcast and haven't grown tired of this voice just yet, you'll love my Refocus podcast. On Refocus, I take a deeper dive with a respected thinker on different aspects of culture. I ask those hard questions that maybe they don't get that often, and I don't shy away from challenging topics to help you share God's grace, truth, and love with others. So listen to Refocus with Jim Daly on your favorite streaming app today.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
Cynthia, those learning styles that we mentioned a moment ago, let's cover those now. You've identified auditory, visual, kinesthetic. Right. Speak to those three types and define them for us.
Well, and even kind of the context of all of that is an important statement. The brain can only absorb what the seat can endure. So,
I like that rule.
You know, if you become distracted, if you're uncomfortable in your environment, all those things matter, right? So if you are a person who needs to talk about it, but you're in a situation where you're not allowed to talk, you're supposed to just listen. But the thing is, if you're highly auditory, the person you need to listen to is your own voice before you can actually remember it. Mm-hmm. If you're visual, I need to see what you're talking about. At least in my imagination, you have to draw a picture. I can't just sit there and listen to you talk and create my own picture. Show me. The kinesthetic, well, that's always one of the most challenging ones. How long can I sit in this chair? And if I'm wanting to move and you don't let me move, what am I thinking about?
Moving.
That's all I'm thinking about. And so even in the stuff, the information goes in one ear, gains speed, goes out the other. However, if I'm moving and I can even just turning in my chair while you're talking to me, then I don't even know I'm moving because now my body's not telling me to move. My body is letting me pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, I'm laughing because it also works in marriage. I mean,
it's true.
The thing that Jean and I mean, and she's right. I have no defense of this, but like when she's telling me a detailed story, mm-hmm. I'm starting to finish her sentences because I'm like, oh, you wanted to do that? No, let me finish.
That's my husband. You know, that's part of the auditory part. And if I interrupt him, and I don't know if this is way with Gene, if I interrupt him, he starts over. And so I have to discipline myself. No, no, I know if I interrupt.
No, it's terrible of me. I mean, that is something. I mean, look at what I do. I talk to people all day, and that's what I do at home, too.
Gee, but I'm always asking him for the short version. And he said, you always want the short version. And I went, yes, yeah. I do want the short version.
So those styles work their way all through our adult life, typically, is the point. Yes. This is going to be your learning style, just like you have a personality type.
And you're going to spot
extrovert.
Them really early in your children if you know what you're looking for. And you start to cultivate that as a strength and help them. They can do hard things. For instance, if the really restless child can learn how to discipline themselves to not move when they don't have to by understanding awareness is half the battle. So if you teach them why they're having trouble and how, then they can cope with it. Yeah. And so the rest of their lives, they'll know how to learn, not just get it and leave.
Yeah, helping them, equipping them to understand how they learn is really critical.
There's another
element to this. It's analytical thinkers and global thinkers. I define those because I'm not sure which I might be.
This is probably one of the most empirically sound. Witkin was the researcher, just to put it in a really short version. We kind of have two ways that our minds were designed to take in and process information. And one of them, the analytic way, is to, as soon as you take it in, you want to listen for the details, you want to put it in steps and put it in an organized manner and break it down into pieces. The opposite, the way my brain is wired, and not my analytic husband's, is when the information comes in, I want to step back and go, okay, wait a minute, what does this have to do with anything I care about? What are we talking about?
And that's the global thinker.
The global thinker is trying to figure out, how does this fit into the whole big picture? And it makes such a difference in almost every aspect of learning and of personality.
Yeah, and again, the funny thing is, we're not talking about marriage, but man, does it apply? Because opposites tend to attract, and that's Gene's the analytical, and I'm the global.
Right. Our other genes too, right? I mean, we're giving those traits to our kids, and they come out a mix of both. Sometimes the parents will look at each other and go, so where do we get this one?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have environment that can impact that as well. Speak to how environment can impact our learning style.
I tell people now that, I said, if my parents could have afforded it, knowing what I know about myself now, I would have been the happiest if they would have gone to a restaurant supply, bought a used restaurant booth, bought it in the house, and I would have done my homework there. I could eat,
drink,
I could sit in that comfortable booth and slide in and out, I could have friends visit me, and I would have gotten all my work done. Now, that's not my analytic husband or my analytic son that would want it that way. But once you can figure out, all right, so like one of the questions we ask in the workbook, if you could go to school between 6 a.m. and noon, or you could choose to go between noon and 6 p.m., what would you choose? Well, it comes out almost 50-50 with the kids themselves saying, oh, I'd love it if I could just get it over with by noon. And others are going, oh, no way. If I could not get up at 6 and I didn't have to start till noon, I'd happily go till 6. Mm-hmm. So it's part of that is finding out, when are you at your best? Because again, it goes back to your brain absorbing and having the distractions that keep you from learning, and it's the simplest thing sometimes.
Yeah, it's really good. You mentioned the workbook. That's part of this effort that you've put together, in addition to an assessment that parents can help their younger kids or the older kids can do to kind of get their learning style and understand themselves a bit better.
Parents and teachers. I beta tested it with my niece, who's a great Christian school teacher there in the Seattle-Tacoma area, and she did it with her middle schoolers. And they talked to me, and we went back and forth on what they had a question about or how they could make it better. And these are 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And when they finished, she said they just really had a better handle on how they learned, and they talk about it. And they now know a reason, and they have a language that they can talk with each other. And the workbook, it takes it, you can do from preschool all the way through adulthood, depending on how you want to fill the workbook out. But for once, we can give it to teachers, especially if Christian schools are willing to do it, and you can do it with your whole classroom. Parents can figure out, for the younger kids, they can ask them questions and fill it out. For the older kids, a lot of discussion happens. And then we have found that the best way to do this is to give kids, if you want them to succeed, make them part of the whole process of getting the solution for success, their own success. When they're in charge of their own success, they can say, wait, that's not going to work for me. Now, if your child starts saying that's not going to work for me, that's a sign of success, because you can say, what do you think you need?
Well, that and buy-in, which is great for the kids, that they're buying into learning how they learn. And that's a great accomplishment for them. And I would think that's the outcome of doing the workbook and doing the assessment with your children.
We have this formula for success, which is just three steps. Know your strengths, know what you need in order to figure out what you need in order to succeed, and then be ready to prove it works, because it's all about accountability. You don't let any accountability go in this. You say, okay, doesn't work for you. Okay, well, here's the bottom line. This is what we need to do. If you have another way to get there, let's try it.
Yeah.
But you have to get there. So we're not saying anything's okay. We're saying, be ready to prove it works, but I'm going to give you some chance to find out.
So we've covered kind of the landscape of public education and then getting to know your child's learning style and how to get them in a place to succeed. Let's move to that third component, which is what are the options educationally now? There are millions of new homeschoolers, as an example, because of the public school scare, I would say. Once parents were able to peer into the homework and the assignments and the class discussions through the pandemic, parents were like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And I think over a million new homeschool students entered homeschool programs. Speak to the options that are there for parents.
And the interesting thing, in 2020, 63% decided to homeschool instead of do school in the living room. When schools opened again, only 17% of that 63 went back. The rest stayed homeschooling.
Yeah, so it's big right now.
It's one of the reasons why I invited Mary Jo Dean, who she and her husband founded Great Homeschool Conventions, and I asked her to write two chapters of this book for me to describe how the whole landscape of homeschool is changing. There are some amazing things in the homeschool. And it used to be, and I just, you know, I think, I hope I don't offend anybody, but, you know, like 30 years ago when I first started, I avoided the homeschool conventions because they were real strict with me, and they were kind of, you know, they were sort of countercultural, if you know what I mean. And then it kind of turned into, well, I'm afraid they might all be women in denim jumpers. And then it's not even that at all. But now, in the last 15 years or so, it's professionals and as well as the whole spectrum.
Yep.
I've run into lawyers and police officers and firefighters who say, you know what, whatever it takes, if it takes this, that's what I'm going to do, because our children are too important and valuable.
And
so we
give
some really good ideas.
Yeah, there's so many good options in the homeschooling movement where they do co-op learning. You know, you get together with other parents that have expertise in math or in science or something like that. I think here in Colorado Springs, we have a lot of Air Force, retired Air Force, that they're astronauts and pilots. And you can get into groups here in Colorado Springs, for example, that, you know, an astronaut is training your child in science and space science. That's pretty cool.
That's right.
So the expertise is high.
When you read these chapters, I think you're going to be inspired to find out more.
You know, and I think back, Cynthia, with Dr. Dobbs, I mean, he really got that rolling. Focus on the Family did a lot of programs on homeschooling back in the day. You remember that, John? You probably were just
here.
I do, here.
And we homeschool because of those programs.
And I think that's one option. You still have good alternatives. We did with, at the time, the charter school that we put our boys in, we thought was a great option. Thanks to Trent, he came up to me not long ago and said, Dad, I'm the only one in my class that knows how to write a college paper because of my high school. Boy, did he complain then, though.
Right, right.
But now he's saying thank you.
Too.
So you do have some good choices.
Some really
public school, but really know your school. Charter school, homeschool, Christian private school. That can be expensive, but people might look at that as well.
And you know, the bottom line with this book, it's totally biblical worldview. And there are scriptures to back it up. And we don't make any bones about saying your child was created by God. And it's too important not to keep the biblical worldview first priority in their lives. And one of the statements I make in the book is, it will take sacrifices, but just be sure it's not your child who's the one being sacrificed.
Boy, that is well said, Cynthia. And I, you know, again, I think of what is it that you want your children to know? And I think when you look at Christian values, Christian virtues, it's such a odd thing that we are dampening down any kind of teaching of any kind of values and virtues in public school. what do you expect students to graduate with? They're not going to understand appropriateness in not lying, not cheating, not doing things that actually are counterproductive to the culture. So, you know, that is critical. If we're producing people that have no values and virtue out of public education, we're going to have citizens that have no values and virtue. And that's really unhealthy for a democracy. Cynthia, thank you for being with us. This flew by, man. This was so fast. But I think it's one of those great resources, Reclaiming Education, a book that's so needed right now. And when you look again at where culture's at, what happened in Virginia with parents who got involved, and really Governor Glenn Youngkin, who rode that into the governor's seat there, helping parents better decide options for them educationally. That's a tip. That's a tell in the culture that something is afoot.
And giving them confidence. You've got priority here. Step up. Take initiative to make sure what your child's learning, and to make sure they're learning what you want them to be learning, and that it's part of God's plan.
Yeah, that's so good. Reclaiming Education, teach your child to be a confident learner. And you can get this book through Focus on the Family. In fact, Focus on the Family published it, and we're proud to be standing with Cynthia in that endeavor. Make a monthly pledge of any amount, and we'll send it as our way of saying thank you for being part of the ministry team and for helping us equip parents to be more aware of options in education. Monthly giving also benefits families all year long, as we anticipate working with nearly, get this, John, 700,000 moms and dads this year alone, helping them to improve their parenting skills, develop stronger bonds with their children, and provide important character training to the next generation. Man, that's important stuff.
It really is, yes.
You can be a part of that family transformation when you sign up to join our Friends of Focus on the Family today.
Yeah, we really welcome your support, and if you can't afford a monthly pledge right now, we would welcome a one-time gift of any amount to help benefit families. Either way, call 800, the letter A, and the word family. Donate and request your book when you call 800-232-6459 or stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And then we'll also have a link to the learning styles assessment that Cynthia was talking about earlier. It's really helpful. Well, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ. You're listening to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We'll take a quick break here and then return with another faith-building program for your family. Stay tuned.
As a parent, it's easy to find myself sitting backseat to my kids, in the back seat. It's tough to be a step ahead, and full honesty, I'm pretty hard on myself when that happens. But I've found Practice Makes Parent, a podcast from Focus on the Family, hosted by Dr. Danny Huerta and Rebecca St. James. It helps me be more intentional and not feel alone when things get tough. Everything they share is practical and well-practiced, and I can use it right away. Listen to Practice Makes Parent wherever you get your podcasts.
It's one of those things that can really make the family stronger. The key is to really watch in community. The screens that we have now can tend to isolate us. They tend to separate us. But when you are watching something in the same living room, sitting on the same couch, that can be a point of connection with your kids.
That's Paul Acey. He's with Focus on the Family's Plugged In team. They do media and entertainment reviews. And he's with us today on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, along with his colleague Adam Holtz. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fuller.
John, you know the way young people kind of seek entertainment today? I mean, it's all over the
place.
All
the time.
I remember, I think Trent and Troy are in their 20s, but I think back, it seems more complex just in the last 5 to 10 years, more complex than it was when we were raising the boys at that 10, 11, 12 age. But there are things you can do, and I'm so proud of the Plugged In team. Plugged In has been at Focus on the Family for a long time, and they have steadily encouraged and equipped parents to know what's out there in the media, what their children are going to be exposed to, either by their friends or maybe in their own home with gaming and with movies and you name it. They review it and give parents the tools to help make better decisions and choices for their children. And that's the goal. I remember so often we'd say, you know, a movie would come out and the boys would want to see it. And what does Plugged In have to say about it? Oh, Dad, we got to read Plugged In. Of course we do. We want to be informed, right? Okay. And then they'd go get it, read it. And what do you think? Think we should see that? Probably not. And it's a good outcome. Yeah. You know, it develops their discernment skills. Mm-hmm. So, but they're also really good at simply telling you what that piece of entertainment proposes and what you need to be aware of, then use it to talk to your children about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are messages in all the media. We have to be thoughtful about it and what we're consuming, and that's what these guys do, they and the team. Adam Holtz, as I said, is with Plugged In. He's the director of the department and host of the Plugged In show. Paul Acey is senior associate editor and often appears on the podcast, and the team has a great book. It's called Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, and we've got copies of that here. It's going to really walk you through how to engage with the culture, with the media, to know and to help your kids learn how to discern. Get details about the book at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast or give us a call.
Adam and Paul, welcome into the studios. Thanks
great
for having
to be
us.
Here.
Yeah, it's so good to have you guys in here. Now, you guys do a podcast. You do a, I don't know if it's 90-second radio clip that distributed on how many stations around the country?
Thousands of radio stations.
Yeah, yeah, you got it. Plugged In is probably the most listened to product of Focus on the Family. 8-9 million mm-hmm. people get it in some form or fashion. That's pretty good.
There's a lot of need out there, right? I mean, this what we talk about at Plugged In is one of the biggest pain points the parents deal with on a day-to-day basis. The technology, the entertainment that parents are trying to navigate to help their kids walk through can be really, really tricky.
In that context, I mean, again, the real-world experience. And I think Gene and I had that. You just get overwhelmed as a parent. Yeah. I mean, it just keeps it's not just coming through every door, but window, crack, crevice. It's like impossible, seemingly, to control.
Yeah.
And you, at some point, you kind of have to decide, what are we going to do here? What is kind of the team's advice when it comes to what's our goal?
Yeah.
Well, I think the goal is really to move from understanding the need for protection, for avoidance, I think, when our kids are very young, and that, you know, filters on the internet, filters on your phone do a great job of, I think, protecting your kids, especially from that unintentional exposure. But as they move through their teen years, we want to give them opportunities to make choices and then engage with them so that by the time they leave our house, they have had some practice thinking biblically and critically on their own. And we may not always agree with their choices. My 17-year-old sometimes makes choices where I'm like, let's talk about that afterwards.
Yeah, it really is very difficult. What you said at the beginning was it really does get exponentially more difficult as time goes on, it seems like. You know, I think the big thing that if there was one takeaway that I would say parents should really come away with this conversation with would be talk with your kids.
Yeah.
Talk with your kids all the time about what they're watching, the social media they're involved in, what they're playing, the conversation that
what their friends are into.
What their friends are into. And to talk with your kids about what they are into is going to be so, so critical as their child grows.
You know, with that kind of audience that we talked about, you do get secular reviewers looking at what you're doing. And I get that out on the road. People will meet with me at a conference or something like that and talk about Plugged In, which is great. But they also give you some teasing feedback where they're saying, do you actually count all the bad words in a movie? Because when you look at the movie reviews particularly, we are going to say, you know, the usage of this term was X number of times, and kind of describe the philosophy of what you're trying to do there.
Well, we want to give people all of the information about what they can expect to see. We'll just say in movies. Obviously, we deal with other forms of entertainment as well. Different families have different pain points and different kinds of content that are their triggers. And there is a difference as somebody watching a movie between, you know, a particular bad word or two that's used two or three times and or 50. Or 100. Like, there's a point at which, okay, there's an onslaught of usage of these words we want you to be aware of that.
Yeah, we have such a wide and diverse audience, right? We really run the gamut in terms of who we're trying to reach. We have families that maybe go to one movie a year, if that. We have families that are very much like the secular culture out there, who go to a lot of things that's really popular. And because we've been blessed with such a wide audience, we try to reach all of those people. And we realize we do have one of the strangest jobs here.
It's a weird
right?
job.
It's a very strange job.
They think they have a weird job.
Uh-huh. It's fun yeah. sometimes,
Why
but
did you
mostly
say
weird.
That? It well, makes sense to me.
Because of the profanity county for
well,
one
that's
thing.
True. You're you know, exposed to things that we well, don't want to be exposed to.
But going into a movie, you know, most people do what we do for fun, right?
Right.
We do this for work. Mm-hmm. We take a pad of paper in, we have a little light up pen, we mark down all the problems, we do all this sort of stuff. So we are actually in the movie theater working. And that's a very, very odd place to be.
And you know, it's a good point. People need to pray for you guys. Mm-hmm. Seriously, for yeah. the Plugged In team, because you're stepping into the ugliness of culture to inform us, the Christian community, about what to watch out for.
Yeah.
Kind of like spies in the land, right?
Right. Or like Nehemiah and the building of the wall. I mean, that's one of the Old Testament passages that we feel like is a template for what we do, because people will ask us, well, isn't it self-evident that people should be avoiding that? I'm like, well, for some people it's self-evident, and for a lot of people it's not self-evident at all, mm-hmm. you know, what you should be engaging with or not. And so we really see ourselves having a calling, and I don't want to over-spiritualize it, but there is a spiritual component here of being those watchmen on the wall.
Yeah. In the book, you point out three false beliefs. I think meism is one of them. There's two more. What are they? And
yeah,
and
yeah.
I think you related it to La La Land, which yeah. I did not see. So I'm in La La Land with your answer.
So when you go to the movies, right, you see tons and tons and tons of different worldviews. And I think that you could probably spot five or six or seven in every movie that you see. But three of them that I highlighted in the book, you have meism, which is really sort of this Epicurean ideal where you are just living your life for your own benefit. You're trying to live as you want to live, to enjoy the life that you've been given, right? And so La La Land is sort of an example of that. But it essentially is about this man and a woman. The woman wants to be an actress. The man wants to be a jazz singer. They fall in love. And at the end of the movie, they realize that their own individual goals are more important than them as a couple. And obviously, when you're coming at it from our perspective, where marriage is a beautiful, it should be your primary focus. After the Lord,
yeah.
right? So you need to prioritize those relationships in your life instead of those career goals. So that felt like a good example of meism.
Yeah.
The other two that you see often in movies is nihilism. And I would probably point to one of my favorite movies is actually The Dark Knight, but The Joker is a perfect example of
patron
nihilism.
Saint.
The patron saint of nihilism who just wants to watch the world burn. And then humanism is another huge, huge thing where as we move into this secular culture, the culture is becoming more and more secular, less believing that there's a transcendent meaning to life. And that's probably one of the most corrosive things that you can find in entertainment, even though you can have some very powerful humanistic messages in movies that can also reflect to Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all good examples of what the culture is throwing at us. Mm-hmm. Obviously, being single is also a good thing. Paul wrote about that. So, mm-hmm. you know, get your relationship with the Lord right, and then whether you marry or you stay single, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I do want to make the point here, though, that one of the key things is how to use all of this to help equip your children to better understand the world around them, whether they're 7, 8, 12, 13, 16, 17. And that should be a maturation process, mm-hmm. and they're being exposed to more through mm-hmm. friends and friends at school, things like that. So describe that Christian parents' responsibility. It's not to keep them in a dungeon
no.
and to keep them from all things evil, because you won't be able to do it. Paul
right.
even says you can't live in this world without being
right.
exposed to evil. So the exposure is going to be there. It's mm-hmm. really equipping them on how to digest it, how to turn from it,
yeah.
and how not to embrace it.
Exactly. You know, I think that we can intentionally look for stories that will be redemptive and that may reinforce a biblical worldview or a perspective. Like, let's take Finding Nemo. You know, here we have a clownfish who gets separated from his son, and we see the father go to extraordinary lengths to find his son. Is Finding Nemo a Christian movie? No, it's not. But it's also a movie that feels like it's ready-made for a conversation with our kids about the father seeks us out. You know, the parallels between that and the story of, you know, the prodigal son, they're right there. It's low-hanging fruit. So that's intentional. But then there's the reactive thing. Sometimes you're just watching something together. You're not trying to have a teachable moment. You're just being a normal person. Our family likes America's Got Talent. And I would say about 80% of the acts are really fun and inspiring, and about 20% are off the rails one way or another. And one night we were watching it, and they were going to have a medium on and do a seance. And I said, okay, we're going to turn this off now, and we're going to talk about what that means. And so we stopped it. I said, here's why we're not going to watch that. And we looked at Ephesians chapter 6, and we talked about spiritual warfare and some of the things that scripture has to say about, you know, contacting spirits. And I said, okay, we want to have this sort of back and forth natural dialectic between what we're experiencing and what scripture has to say. And again, there are some times that it's easy. And sometimes you're not that proactive. You know, I don't want to make it look like we stop and get the Bible out every time we watch TV, because yeah. we don't. But there are times that one was so black and white.
Yeah.
That I'm like, kind
of like
okay,
the Nemo, the opposite of the
exactly,
Nemo.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And that really drives home the point that we really need to, as moms and dads, we need to be talking with our kids all the time. Your kids are going to be exposed to things that you do not want them to be exposed to. To know that they have the ability to go up to you and talk to you about something that bothered them, something yeah. that pulled them in a way that maybe they didn't want to be pulled.
Or even falling to temptation. They did something they knew they shouldn't have.
Absolutely. It is about the relationship. The relationship is the most important thing when it comes to dealing with entertainment and technology. Mm-hmm. We talk all the time about the influences that our kids are under. And obviously, entertainment, technology, they are huge influences. But there is nothing more influential in a child's life than mom and dad. Even when you as a parent don't think your kids are listening to you, they are. You need to speak into these experiences.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
Hey parents, Parent here. If you're searching for biblical and practical tips for your kid's specific age, you know, with all that extra time you have, well, you can stop. Focus on the Family has weekly age and stage emails that bring the tips to you. Each week, I get an email for my son that I can read on my phone and put directly into practice. No more sifting through junk on the internet. I can focus my time on being intentional. It's easy. Visit mykidsage.com, add your kid's age, and get to parenting better. That's mykidsage.com.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
You know, let me press in on this a little bit, because this is helpful to parents. This is the number one issue parents will contact us about, is how do I control the screen time of my children? It's driving me crazy. Now, here's the reality as well, and maybe you could work this into your answer. No two human beings, I don't think, agree on what is the right spot. Like
right.
We're trying to find this destiny that's perfect.
Right.
So what is a healthy spiritual perspective, Christian perspective when it comes to this environment? Because I'm telling you right now, there's going to be some on both ends of that
right.
continuum where you're saying, you're crazy, Adam.
Right.
You're crazy,
No,
Paul.
That's right. And they actually write to us fairly regularly.
Yeah. So direct all that content to Adam or Paul.
That's right.
Not to Jim or John.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
Yeah. But go ahead, take a shot at it and make somebody upset.
Here I go. You know, I think that I love the fact that Scripture says Jesus came in grace and truth. Right. And I think this is a worldview lens that we can look at entertainment and look at our kids through. And I also think personality wise, as parents, we probably tend toward one of those poles more than the other. And sometimes it is exactly what you're saying. Mom is holding the line on truth. That's garbage. Why would you watch that? Dad's like, loosen up. But sometimes I've seen it the other way. You know? I think it's good to know where you're at as a parent, because it may mean you need to lean a little bit harder intentionally the other direction. My wife and I both actually, I would say, lean toward the grace end of things. And so occasionally we have to circle up and say, maybe we actually need a little firmer boundaries.
That's
in these
why you have
areas.
Grandparents.
Well, exactly. Exactly. But sometimes if you've got all these rules and you feel like your kids are constantly pushing against them, I think the other thing, you know, Paul says in Ephesians, fathers, don't exasperate your sons. And I think there's an exasperation factor when it's just rules, 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 rules. And sometimes we can set the rules and we may not even understand what's our child's heart, because that child's heart is so much more important than making sure that we never make a mistake, because we're probably going to make mistakes.
Yeah, and to your point, you need to know your child, right? Because every son, every daughter is different. They're going to have different pain points, different sensitivities, which is one of the reasons why we're as detailed as we are, right? We know that we're dealing with a lot of different families, and every single line, as you say, Jim, will be drawn a little bit differently.
Yeah, it's hard to find that perfect spot. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the questions? Let's move to that. What are some of the questions parents should ask themselves as they attempt to set boundaries for their children?
Well, I think one of the questions we can ask is, what can I observe about how a particular form of entertainment or screen-based engagement is affecting my child?
So that's intentionality.
That's intentionality.
I mean, that's a big thing to do. That means you need to be in touch, observing, engaged, knowing what your children's reacting to.
Yep.
That's not small.
No, mm-mm. It's not small, and mm-mm. It's not easy, because it will almost always mean I'm noticing things I don't like. For example, when Fortnite came out, everybody was playing Fortnite, and we very tentatively gave the green light. I'm like, okay, it's not Call of Duty. It's not an M-rated game. It's not graphic. There's not, you know, massive profanity. And again, it becomes that relative versus the absolute judgment. And relative to the other things that are out there, I'm like, okay, we can navigate this. But I saw with my son, the more he played, the more he was irritable and the more he was aggressive. And there's a lot of research out there that shows that violent video games are correlated with aggression and a lack of empathy. And I was seeing those things. And I talked to him about it. I said, I think we need to cut back the amount of time you're playing this game, because I don't like what I see with how it's, you know, causing you to behave.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that's really important, is to ask those questions about how entertainment, how technology, how social media is affecting your child.
Well, and I think the other thing that we can look for, it's not all just draw the boundary and avoid things that are bad. I think one of the things we talk about in the book is also look for places where you can enter into your child's entertainment world, mm-hmm. where you're building a relationship with them. And just very quickly, we downloaded Pokemon Go when it came out in 2016. My son and I are still playing that game together 8 years later. Mm-hmm. We have spent hundreds of hours relationally together. And I tell you what, I had no idea when we downloaded it that it would become such an important point of connection with my son.
Well, and let me just add, and Paul will get your response there, but again, some temperaments in the parents
right.
will find that hard to
sure.
accept.
Absolutely.
But there is, especially dads with sons,
yep.
You know, how many people and ministry leaders have talked about, you know, they need something shoulder to shoulder, not right. eye to eye. You know, you do something with your son as a dad, and that is an illustration of
yeah.
that. You just don't want it to be damaging, right?
No,
but
no,
something like that.
Exactly. And I mean, we had the birds and the bees talk playing Pokemon Go downtown in Colorado Springs.
You should turn that into something.
You know, exactly.
Here's how to do that talk.
Here's how to do that. And so it just was, it's been a terrific point of connection.
Yeah.
One thing that I think, as we talk about these issues, we have to be aware as parents that it starts with us, right? Mm-hmm. When we're trying to change our kids' attitudes toward their screens, we need to make sure that we are mindful of our own habits, because these things, just as they can be problems for our kids, they can be problems for us too. You know, one of the number one things that kids complain about in studies, how is your relationship with your parents? a lot of times these kids say, I don't feel like my parents are listening to me because they're always on their phone. They're always scrolling on their phone. And that's a really important thing. When you have these very difficult conversations, and they are very, very difficult, you need to start with yourself. What are my habits? And when you change your own media habits, that can help ease the conversation for your kids.
And that's a great reminder. I think Jean did a fantastic job keeping this ever present. She, you know, she had that perspective. I was the more yeah, grace-filled. I like that word.
Grace-filled. You can tell that to her later.
But, you know, it did, you know, that became an issue. I mean, she was worried I wasn't concerned enough. She was probably, no, she was right. Let me just say it that way. I was going to put the little edge on it, the escape clause. But also in that regard, the reality is you are not going to be putting your child in this bubble.
Right.
They're going to be exposed. I love the idea of how to use that positively then for the right outcome, which is a highly capable, spiritually deep, discerning Christian adult. That's the goal. So even though there's all these dangers in the entertainment realm, Paul, let me direct this to you. It can also be a valuable tool to help children better understand what kind of world they live in.
It can be an incredibly valuable tool. And I would go with two connection points with that, right? Number one, it can launch dialogue. Mm-hmm. You can talk about some pretty difficult issues when you see them in some of the stories that you're involved with, that you're watching with your kids. And I would suggest always to, whenever possible, engage with your kids' entertainment choices. You know, if you're watching alongside them, that gives you a place where you can sort of jumpstart some of these conversations. But the other thing it can really provide is that point of contact, you know, that point of connection. I have watched terrible, old, bad black and white movies with my daughter since she was 11 years old. And we continually just watch these movies, make fun of them. They are some of my favorite memories with my daughter that we've had. They can be incredibly, entertainment can be an incredibly powerful connection point. You know, dads who have played Mario Kart with their sons, you know that there are these points of contact that you can develop. Families, every Christmas, often sit down and watch a favorite movie again and again, be it It's a Wonderful Life. Adam likes the movie Elf. You know, it's one of those things that can really make the family stronger. The key is to really watch in community. The screens that we have now can tend to isolate us. They tend to separate us. But when you are watching something in the same living room, sitting on the same couch, that can be a point of connection with your kids. And that's a beautiful thing.
It's funny. I'm thinking to a story with Troy when he was like 8 in a Bible study. I'm sitting in the back as one of the dads, a pastor, youth leader is leading this little 12 boy Bible study. And the pastor said, "Who knows what the definition of courage is?" So Troy shoots up his hand. I'm going, "Oh, this is interesting." And he goes, "Well, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway." And the pastor guy went, "Where did you get that?" "It's on my dad's John Wayne cup." So there's a positive example.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I mean, this is it. This is what we're trying to do. You are both doing a fantastic job in Plugged In. Plugged In, it reminds me, the metaphor would be like this gold mine that as you as a parent dig into the content, you find these nuggets that are super valuable on how to help your children be equipped to discern the culture and to know the culture around them. As parents, let's not be afraid, but let's engage and then put constructive boundaries around what it is we're going to allow our children to see, even if they kick and scream a bit. Be brave. You can do it. And then like now with, in our case, I don't know about you, John, but with 20-something young people, Trent and Troy, they respect what we did. And again, I give Gene a whole lot of credit for being bold and solid in making sure they were making good choices. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, and as we've mentioned, there's so many elements to the Plugged In outreach. Stop by the website and find out more about the newsletters that they do, about the podcast, about all the different things going on. And we would be happy to link over to that in the website. And of course, we'll have a link as well to the book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. It's kind of a collaborative effort. Paul, you were the editor for that. And it's a terrific resource that'll keep this conversation going. So get a copy of that book today when you make a donation of any amount to the Ministry of Focus on the Family.
And John, right now we're trying to find 1,000 more monthly sustainers who can help the ministry continue to meet the needs of families, mm-hmm. right? And this is a great example of what we do here. And I would love for you to be one of those new monthly sustainers here at Focus on the Family. So contact us about that. And if you do that, we'll send you the book as our way of saying thank you for ministering to other families that need help.
Yeah, join the support team, make a monthly pledge as you can, or if you're not in that spot, a one-time gift is appreciated as well. We'll send that book to you. Again, the title, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. It's written by the Plugged In team, and it's a terrific resource. We're a phone call away, 800, the letter A and the word family. 800-232-6459, or stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast for all the details. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.
It can be challenging to inspire your community to see life the way God sees it. So what's the solution? Well, on June 15th, Focus on the Family is hosting Sea Life 24. And no matter where you are or who you are, you can be a part of this free event with speakers like Ben and Kirsten Watson and real stories about choosing life. Sea Life 24 will inspire you to translate your faith into action. Register today at sealife24.org.